Hello and welcome to another episode of the Construction Corner Podcast. I'm Dylan, I'm your host, joined again today with my blue collar badass. And guys, just as a reminder, I have done over $750 million worth of commercial construction projects, meaning we've kind of seen it all, designed through it, you know, designing the electrical and low voltage systems for it, led teams of electrical engineers and designers, as well as MEP teams, doing over $100 million just in healthcare alone. With that, Matt, my blue-collar badass co-host, has done $100-plus million worth of commercial construction as a general contractor in Michigan and elsewhere around the country. So again, we have learned a ton of lessons, and we do this show really to help all of you in the construction industry not step in the holes that we have over our decades of experience. So today, our topic, as you can read by the description here, is about contracts, contract negotiation, and first and foremost, for you to actually get out your bifocals for some of you and read those contracts. So without further ado, Matt, how's it going, man?
Things are going good, Dylan. And yeah, guys, just to reiterate, you know, we have stepped in more holes and fallen in more spots in our collective time in this industry than we probably care to admit. So anything we can do to help you bypass some of those and get on to bigger, better, newer holes to fall into, that's what we're here for. So, but in terms of lately, man, things are good. Contract negotiations is a great topic. We've talked about it before. We could probably end the show by just saying, read it. Read your damn contracts, but that wouldn't really be a whole lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to this one because we've been going through quite a bit of this as of late here.
Yeah. And talking to folks in other industries that really don't end up doing a lot of contracts, right? Like for every single project that we do, there is a contract associated with it. And so for all of us in the construction industry, we have a ton of contract, just reading knowledge, verbiage that we've been exposed to that really doesn't exist in many other industries. You know, we talk to a lot of other business owners, be it an entrepreneur group like Arte, and like contracts are kind of foreign to a lot of those guys in other industries. So in contract, like we have to be somewhat part lawyer because each one of our projects is pretty massive, you know, like a good size project or fee, you know, for somebody in like basically any other industry, right? Selling widgets or watches or whatever, the most expensive watch, you know, might be $1 million. $1 million to us is a small project, you know? So like the dollar values are just so much bigger to where we have to have contracts. It's not like you're buying, you know, even though this microphone was $300, like I don't have to sign a contract to buy this microphone or, you know, a watch or a cup or whatever for a lot of people in other industries, or even like consulting services, whatever. There's maybe an agreement, but it's not really like contract verbiage, legalese that you have to sift and sort through. So that makes construction very, very unique. And I think we have to remember this, that it makes us a very unique industry in that we do have very extensive, very detailed, very specific contracts. And some of them too, with like liquidized damages and all the other clauses that come into those contracts that again, most people in pretty much any other industry do not have to deal with.
Yeah. And when you, I mean, especially on the GC side, right? And I'm going to, not that we have it harder than everyone, but you know, as far as contracts go, so we negotiate and set up the prime contract with the client, with the owner. And that is can be an extensive process in and of itself. Our base level contract for design build projects is 36 pages long. And it took me probably 3 months of sitting right next to my attorney to really finally craft this thing so that it's fair to everybody. I mean, you can't go out there looking to screw people. And that's part of what we'll talk about today. But we crafted this contract that it's fair all around, but it's also it's balanced, right? And that's what you have to really shoot for. But so after we get through the owner side contract, I mean, shit, man, on a normal project, on a mid-sized project, we might issue 100 subcontracts, you know, 50, whatever, depending on what we're doing. So while we don't negotiate those as heavily because a lot of our quote unquote, our team has been with us for a long time, and we've already crossed those hurdles, you know, years before. We're still dealing with the paperwork, right? And it's not like any other industry, because, you know, if certain industries don't deliver when they say they're going to, right, there might be a small, the biggest penalty usually is lack of repeat business, right? Whereas our contracts, you already mentioned liquidated damages. I mean, just to spill it real quick, I'm looking at a contract today that has liquidated damages, which, in case you're not familiar, guys, is a penalty, essentially, although it's not called that, but it's a penalty imposed for every single day that a project goes past the scheduled end date. And there's a substantial completion date and a final completion date. And both of those have typically different penalties slapped with them. We're looking at one today where the client's attorney wants $7,500 a day as LDs, and the project's not that big, right? If this was a $100 million project for an automotive manufacturer, that, you know, maybe you could stomach those, but some of these are outrageous. And, you know, if you really get down to the math of it, you have to quickly go and like figure out what this does to your project if you're actually late. Like, how quickly are you going to eat up all of your profit on just paying these fees? So I don't want to dig too far down that rabbit hole yet, but just to know it, guys, that like when you're in this industry, we can talk your language, Dylan and I, and you know, there's a group of people that understand this, but outside of the walls of construction, people have no concept of what this whole contracting thing looks like, feels like, smells like, or any of it. And they don't understand the legalities of what we're actually doing by signing on the dotted line on some of these.
Yeah, the ramifications that come with these contracts. I mean, liquidated damages is the easiest one to kind of poke at, because again, like $7,500, like it's probably big on that project, but that's small for some of the stuff that I've seen.
Sure.
You know, in a daily deal, like I've seen stuff up to 100 grand plus a day in delays. So it really depends on what you're doing, but it's something to look out for. I don't really want to go past that because it's a whole can of worms on liquidated damages. But for a lot of this, it's to remember that one, you do need a really good attorney. Two, you need to also very much understand what is in those contracts. And then the third piece that I do want to really touch on is whoever is reviewing and signing those contracts, even if you're having your lawyer do it, you also need to go through it with your lawyer. And then the third piece is you also need to communicate that to your team, right? Like, what is in these contracts? What did we sign? What is expected of us? Because what I've seen and been a part of a lot of the time is on the design side, and even in some of the other contractor stuff, like I've never seen some of the contracts that got signed, and they had like a BIM requirement is the biggest one and easiest one to poke at, is they have a BIM requirement, and yet the team did not get informed of what the BIM requirement was on their contracts. And instead of like your base modeling, where it's just, you know, electrically it'd be fixtures, panels, like the normal shit you would model, it is now like every single piece of conduit in the entire project, right? Like it goes from doable to absurd. And there are contracts that have that shit in there where it's, instead of BIM LOD 300, it's BIM LOD 500. That is a substantial difference in one number. And in the entire contract, the amount of work that is required is substantial. And there's a lot of stuff like that in these contracts, you know, payment terms, 15 versus 30 days. That's a substantial difference, right? One number, substantially different. And this goes on and on through the contracts, right? What are your late payment terms? How much are you charged? So the other thing you have to understand, well, here, let's just stop there. Cause like, I do want to get into like late payments and some of that stuff, because there's a big difference in what you can agree to as a business than what you can agree to as an individual. And we really need to understand this, but let's pause there, back up, and talk about like some of these, you know, one word differences, some of the dramatic differences that can be had in contracts.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to become a de facto lawyer yourself, right? It's always advisable to have an actual attorney at your beck and call that can help you with this stuff. But for lots of reasons, you can't always go to your attorney, especially at a smaller firm, right? If I went to my attorney for every single contract, every single thing, and just said, review this whole thing, we'd never make any money, right? I mean, they make a living by charging by the minute, and they should. But because of that, like, you as the owner, you as the person in charge of this, you have to understand what you're looking at. And then you go to your attorney with the stuff that's just over your head or the stuff that doesn't feel right. You know, as far as the one word differences, let's get into it, man. I mean, there's a million different examples we can tear into, but all of them are equally important, really.
Yeah. And the thing, so, and real quick, and then we'll circle back to this, is so when it comes, so one of the easy examples is like late payment, right? You can charge a percentage per day of late payments in a business to business contract because you are both deemed to be there's a specific word for it, but you're both deemed to be knowledgeable parties, right? You're not an idiot in a business to business contract. But if you try to do that in, say, business to consumer, right, some schmuck on the street, right, or us to like a credit card company or whatever, you cannot be egregious in those late payments or like basically high usury values because that person is not deemed intelligent enough to understand what you're doing. But in a business to business contract, and there's better language for that, like there's specific legal verbiage for it, but in layman's terms, this is what it means, is that when you do and execute a business to business contract, you're both deemed like knowledgeable parties. You're both deemed competent to sign that, even though you might not be, because you're a business executing it with another business, you're both deemed intelligent. So when you execute and sign these contracts, it is binding, right? Like you can't deem, or you can't plead ignorance to this just because you didn't know any better. But because of the status of being a business, you're now held responsible for that contract. And I think this gets missed. Like, you can't plead ignorance around, like, I didn't see it, I didn't read it. Well, you signed it, buddy. Like, you know, tough shit, deal with it. And this is, again, in construction, we see this all the time where we're picking out, like in the design world, I'm picking out one line of a specification to hold you to what I want. And I have that recourse, and you have to do it as contractor. And that's just like how it goes. Now, we'd never want to get there, but understand what you're signing when you do this.
That's case in point why we veer away from plan spec projects.
Because
you have a 500 page spec of bullshit. And if the rubber hits the road and something happens, you know, they can pick out one line and say, ah, sorry, it says right here. But I think the bigger point is, you know, you have to be intelligent, right? You have to know what you're signing. You have to question everything. You have to read it, everything, because we are held to it. And you know, there's, you know, the late payment thing is a good one. There's state level laws that limit, you know, how much you can tack on as a percentage penalty, but it doesn't matter if you don't read it. It doesn't matter if you skim it. Nobody gives a shit. If you end up in court, no one's going to say, well, I feel really bad for you, Mr. Vetter. You know, this one is on us. Like, that doesn't happen, man. And we live in such a litigious society, and especially in the construction world, like you cannot afford to not know exactly what you're getting yourself into. You just can't.
I mean, it comes down to, most of this stuff comes down to like, understand what you're signing, right? And both, there's the letter of the agreement, which you better know that you can hold yourself accountable to what is in the letter of that agreement, right? And then for the person issuing that, you also better understand the spirit of the agreement that you're making. And so know that you're going to be held, in worst case, to the letter of that agreement. Like, don't just, it's not in spirit, it is in letter. And so, like, that's what we're going to be held to. But if you're the one issuing the contracts, like also have some grace in some areas for some people, right? This is all case specific, but understand whenever you are signing a contract that is put in front of you by somebody else, that you better understand and know and agree to every letter of that agreement. And also, like, this is what RFIs are for in the bidding process, to go through that contract or in like a spec book or whatever, right, in the bidding phase, but then in negotiation also to like, hey, what do we mean here? Can we put this in plain English? Can we rewrite this paragraph to like make sense to the average person? Let's go through that, because there is a difference in intent and letter of the law, but you are always held to the letter, not the intent.
You absolutely are held to the letter. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there's a lot of us, myself included, who, you know, we're human, right? I don't want to hold somebody's balls to the fire if I don't have to. And so, especially when we're doing contracts with people we've known for a long time, right? There can be a tendency to have kind of verbal addendums, we'll call it, that aren't actually part of your contract, right? Kind of that conversation like, yeah, we'll take care of that. We'll figure it out. And now usually you both mean it, right? You both mean well, but part of this discussion we wanted to have today is the importance of making sure that you've got that attorney on your team, right? Who is going to say, well, are you sure about this, Matt? Because I know you said this, but here's what could happen if X, Y, and Z happen. Because if, let's say, the person you make this handshake deal with outside of your contract goes away, or something happens to them, and all that's left is their attorney, like, that attorney doesn't have that relationship with me. I don't know who the hell they are. I probably never met them. Probably never even talked to them, especially nowadays. Like, we pass back marked up, change tracking on a Word doc. That's it. We don't have a conversation usually. So you got to have somebody on your side that can help you. But, and there's also something, you know, you kind of brought up a little bit. There are certain things in contracts that you cannot budge on under any circumstances. You have to know what those non-negotiables are. And if you can't get your terms approved, then you walk the fuck away. Some of the best projects are the ones you walk away from. But on the flip side, you also need to be flexible when you can, right? Because you don't want to be just this stodgy asshole, at least not what we're doing. We're not building, you know, $100 billion anything, okay? There's different ramifications that come once you start scaling to that level. But where we sit now, you know, we want to be flexible when we can, because we also are trying to, well, yes, we need this contract. We need to legitimize this relationship and legitimize the deliverables and what we're all agreeing to. We also want to build this team. We want to be human, want to be friendly with each other and enjoy what the hell we're doing. So there's definitely things that you can bend on, but you have to know what they mean. And you have to understand, you know, what are you actually being asked here to negotiate? And that's part of the art of the deal, right? Is learning what all this shit actually means, so that you can speak intelligently. You can offer up concessions when appropriate, but you also know that there's certain things you just know, this is a hard stop. We're not even going to discuss that point. And it takes years and years and years of doing this to really know where those boundaries are, but it should be a goal to get there as quickly as possible. And an attorney can help you do that.
Again, one of the simple ones for this is like the BIM level of design requirement, right? And to have a conversation with the owner or whoever's issuing that contract is like, do you guys really need this, right? Do you need level 500? Do you want every stick of conduit modeled? And there are clients out there, right? The like Facebooks, Googles, the people that have a shit ton of money and they want to see it and they feel good about it, even though it, you know, it marginally helps a project and it costs a heck of a lot more to do, but they're fine paying it. Right. And so they want it. Other clients probably won't care. Right. Like if you're doing a gym, for example, or, you know, some smaller facility, like, do they really care about every stick of conduit being modeled and every, you know, half inch water pipe? Maybe, but probably not, right? And so it's having these conversations of like, what is realistic? You know, what's going to be a huge cost and time suck for everybody? And then, okay, hey, we can amend the contract to reflect our conversation that we had in normal plain English to reflect these common sense kind of things, right? And make sure that they get revised and then signed and executed appropriately. So it's having real conversations about stuff, but also knowing how that needs to translate into a legal document so that it can't be gotten around, right? And that's why even on our plans and specs, a lot of it is in pseudo legalese, right? Will provide is a more legal term than not of like, you will do this, provide complete, right? Like to understand what these things mean for you in those contracts or reading through specs or keynotes or whatever it might be on the drawings, right? Because you got to understand too, the contract documents, the CDs, those PDFs are part of the binding package in a construction project, as well as all the specs and everything that comes through it. And those of you guys that are moving from like residential to commercial, this is why commercial is such a bigger deal, is because you have spec books, you know, like Matt mentioned, 500 pages is a little light. Usually they're in three-inch binders that are, you know, full. And then plus however big the sheet set is, you know, like that is what a standard project is going to be. And so for people that move from residential to like, we don't have model numbers and we don't put specs on the drawings and we kind of let them do whatever they want, so we don't get questions in construction, to like, hey, why are, you know, every model number is here. Like we need submittal review. Like they need to submit all this stuff and tell us like there's a process for this. And when you deal with residential people, like that's a, what, you know, how are we going to do this? Like, what do you mean submittal review? We'll just do it via email. I'm like, okay, well, that's a way to handle it, you know. But understand, like, it could, in commercial projects, like the paperwork is a good percentage of the project, right? And understanding that and what you agree to. And we all have, if you've been in this long enough, our kind of basis of understanding, but there is another level that you get into with this. And then the last thing I want to touch on is telling the team, like, what the heck did we agree to? And it's not that you need to disclose dollars or any of that. I mean, maybe you do for your team, but pretty much in every project, everybody knows kind of the financials of it. So like, how in your mind, Matt, do you disseminate those contracts, those agreements to your team so that they can make sure that they're doing the right things in the field?
So that is one of the most critically important meetings that I ever hold internally. And we call it our contract excerpts review. So after I go in, I'm typically the one that negotiates all of our contracts, me and my attorney. Once it's signed, like we're ready to rock. We do kickoff meetings to discuss scope and all that, but then we have a separate contract review meeting. And that is my opportunity to go through and, you know, high level shit, tell everybody what I just signed us up for. And at that level, like there's no discussion, there's no arguing, like there's no opinions needed. Like it's already done. So if you don't agree with me, tough shit. I did what I did. I signed what I signed. I have to now get that out to my team. And it's, but we don't hide anything. I mean, financials have to be in there too, because our guys have to manage the finances of a project. They have to know what they're dealing with. And I can tell you through experience, through history, we didn't always put this much importance on this meeting. And when you don't do that, you have no leg to stand on when your people don't meet the terms of the contract, if they don't even know what the hell those terms are. It's really a bad day when something goes wrong that could have been avoided, and it's because your project manager doesn't know what the payment terms are, or your accountant doesn't know what the LDs are. You have no excuse as the leader, as the guy who's signing his name on these things, if your people don't know what they have to know. Now, I tell all of my team, like, read this contract cover to cover. And I've, especially our newer people, I make them like, you need to read this. You need to understand it. If you have any questions, find me separately. We'll have a private meeting and we'll talk through it because it's that critically important to what we do. But even my more senior people, my veterans, like, read the contract, guys, because I'm going to give you bullet points. Okay. And I'm going to tell you all those things that we got stuck on during negotiations. I'm going to tell you the things where we spent a lot of time discussing, but you have to then take that. And it's like doing a book report, right? Go find the chapter I just referenced and read all of the stuff. Cause what we're not going to do is spend 5 hours with me reading word for word what the contract is. Cause that's highly inefficient, but that's how we do it, man. It's a contract excerpts meeting. There's a written agenda. There's a written summary of all these high level points. And we go through them one by one. And if they have questions, that's a great time to get them out. But then I have the expectation that after we leave that meeting, there are no questions. No one should ever come to me and say, hey, what percentage did we put on this project? What are our payment terms? What are the liquidated damages? What are schedule requirements? Don't come ask me that shit. Like, we all have access to the doc, to the full contract. And now we have this summary of all the high points. It is my team's job to know that intrinsically and move forward. And that's how we've accomplished it. It works pretty well for us. Again, it took a lot of bumps to work out that process.
Oh, I bet. But it's the right thing to do. I mean, I've never been in a company that has done it.
It's brutal, man. You know, it's real easy to not do it, or at least it was. Now it's part of our culture. It's not a fun meeting. It's not like a, you know, hanging around the water cooler, drinking beers or something. Like, this is serious shit, guys. This is what will make or break us moving forward. So pay attention, take notes.
Yeah. It's those details that matter, you know?
Yes.
It's like talking about health insurance. It matters a whole lot. Not real interesting, but it matters.
Yeah, because it's the shit that, like, you don't really care about it today. You care about it in a contract world when you're sitting in a courtroom, or in the insurance world when you're sitting on the operating table. Then those details make a lot of difference to everything that's going to happen. So spend the time now and get through it, and save yourself some of that frustration later. I will say, though, as a kind of end cap to this, I've been very pro attorney today, which is not like me. Now, my attorney's great, right? We get along well. I feel she represents my best interest and all this good stuff. Most attorneys are terrible. So if you do get stuck in the middle of negotiations and it's really not going anywhere, here's a little trade secret. This is what Dylan and I talk about when we tell you guys we've been doing this shit for a very long time. Pick up the damn phone and call the owner and say, look, dude, let's have a man-to-man conversation, because these people on the wings here that are charging us by the minute are looking to justify a fee right now. Let's just talk reasonably. And if we can't agree, fine. But 9 times out of 10, you will get to the agreement you need amicably by just having a conversation with the owner directly.
Yeah. Like, what did you mean here? Oh, you meant that? Well, that's not how your attorney wrote this thing.
Yes.
Oh, you know,
you get mired down in the legalese, man. And like, everything all of a sudden becomes contentious. Everything seems like, oh, they're out to kill me. Like, what is this? And usually when you have those conversations, a lot of times the other party doesn't even know it's in there. And they'll be like, what? No, of course not. I wouldn't expect you to, you know, build the project while standing on your hands. Why would I say that? It's like, well, dude, your attorney did. All right, good. Now we can move forward. We can really get something done.
Right. I mean, and that's the thing, right? Is rule number one, read your contracts. Rule number two, have normal, like, English conversations. Rule number three, tell your people what's in that executed contract.
It's really as simple as that at the end of the day, man.
Before we depart, I do want to ask you about the Build Better Foundation and how those things are going before we exit stage right.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you bringing it up. Things are going awesome. So actually, I didn't even tell you this before, but yesterday I opened the mail and we got our 501c3 approval from the IRS, like,
awesome,
6 months earlier than we expected it, which is amazing. If only they move that fast on returning my taxes. They don't, but that part was good. So we are official. We are 100% full bore. We've got our first big fundraising event coming up in June. So anybody local or anyone wants to come to Southeastern Michigan and golf, we're putting on a golf outing June 24th. If you go to Build Better Foundation on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram, you can find the link to the Eventbrite site. If you want to register some golfers, you want to sponsor, anything and everything is much appreciated. So we're making some inroads with some local high schools already, drumming up some interest. It's kind of a weird time of year to start this sort of thing, but we've got a local high school who is very, very interested. They have a kick-ass construction program. We started talks with them this week. So we're hoping to be able to dole out some scholarships here. I don't know if it'll be before they're out of school, but it'll be before, before summer's over for sure.
Sweet. And there are scholarship opportunities for that golf outing. So if you want your company name, logo, anything like that to be represented throughout the day, they can find that on the Eventbrite, or do they need to reach out separately?
Nope. It's all on the Eventbrite. You can check it out. Obviously any questions if you got, or you want to talk about it, you know, everybody knows how to get a hold of me. We're still working on the website. That's not ready to rock yet, but our social media is up and running. Our good buddy, our combined good buddy, Andy Zeller, designed us a absolutely kick-ass logo. So go check it out. And anybody who wants to help or wants to get involved, we want to talk to you.
And what's the website they can go to again?
Right now it's Build Better Foundation on all of the social media platforms. The website itself coming later is buildbetter.foundation. But again, it's right now it's a landing page. So check us out on social media.
And they get the Eventbrite from social.
Yes, sir. It's on a post. We've got pinned posts on all of the three major platforms that we're on. So LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find it there, and we'd love to have you.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thanks so much for this episode. And guys, I hope you got a lot out of this. You know, again, if nothing else, read your contracts. Have a plain English discussion with the owner or whoever you're signing that contract with. And then 3, tell your team. So that is going to be this episode of the Construction Corner podcast. Until next time.